I'm so happy to get to speak with you about you and I.
I'm on pins and needles. I'm so flattered that you would like to chat, and just can't wait to hear. I just like, talking about it, so
Well,
thank
you
you.
should like talking about it. You have done an exceptional job with this summer. Number one, wearing so many hats right away. The fact that you're writer, director, editor, and you're acting in it. And because of the very nature of the intimacy of some of the scenes, it's very difficult. With a regular film, it's difficult, but when you throw in something this emotionally driven, with the level of emotional and physical intimacy, then it gets even more complicated in terms of directing.
That's what people tell me, and I think sometimes when you feel like you have everything to lose and you want to do so well, you're not really aware necessarily of all the consequences and sometimes all the stakes. So I don't know if it's just like fight or flight response that I try to just go into it with a very kind of zen attitude about it. But you're right, it was probably a little
Yeah,
crazy.
I'm sure that you were relying heavily on Bruce, your DP, in some of those more intense, emotionally intense scenes. Because in my mind, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, what is she doing? Is she jumping out of the bed, running to look at the monitors, and then jumping back into the bed? Because you see that, and knowing the production process, that's the first thing. I thought, please tell me that's not what she had to do.
Particular scenes, no. And in general, I mean, we shot this in 14 days and we had a crew of 10 people. So I
Oh
didn't
my
really
God.
have the luxury or the time even to think about like reviewing playback after every single take
Yeah.
and even just in general. So, but for the intimacy specifically, that was something that I'm not going to lie that at the end of the day, I did go and review all the footage. And even at the end, because there were very specific certain moments I wanted to capture, mainly the ending was important to me. The other stuff I knew I could probably cut around if I had to, but those ending moments between the two people, that was very important to me. So I would review those. But yeah, I had intended for all of that to be like a oneer situation, but then I got into the edit and realized that that's not the way it's going to be, and that's not the way the story should be told.
The decisions you made, obviously, they pay off with this film, Summer. And the thing that stands out most for me in this is number one, the subject matter, the themes, and the fact that this is a film that could not have been made 20 years ago with the emotional, with the poignancy, the emotional poignancy and the sensitivity that it has. You really need to have a life lived for these characters to have objectivity and reflection. We've seen plenty of movies with all the tittering and the laughing where exes, they break up, they're in college a couple years later. Oh yeah, it's uncomfortable. We get back together, we jump in bed and everything's great though. But that's not
That's
what no, I haven't
the life
either. But this is what I so appreciate because we don't have enough stories being told for people at this age, at this stage of their life, where you do start reflecting on your past, especially when a sudden situation comes up, such as here with Sarah and Joseph, and Sarah has no clue that she's showing up for this weekend party and that Joseph is going to be there. That's always a shocker.
That'll always, put you back a few breaths. When you someone that took your breath away many years ago, they seem to always have that capability, in different ways, whether it's with happiness or frightened. Either way, they're taking your breath
That's
away.
just it. But what makes this, because I've been in situations like that, but you see them and you go, oh, thank God I did not stick around for this. Here, Sarah shows up and Joseph is as handsome as ever. And
that's when
you're really doing double takes. And I love that you mm-hmm. did that and didn't make Joseph a train wreck the minute you see mm-hmm. him. So you put so much thought into this story. And as we go through this weekend with them together, and there they are, and they're reliving the past in the hotel room, and there's a maturity, there's a reflective nature there, but you also give them the feeling of they've been married for 30 years as they're standing there doing the double person at the sink, brushing their mm-hmm. teeth, combing their hair. He's zipping up her dress. I know of no man out there that bothers to zip up a dress anymore. But you have add so much to this relationship with those little things. So where did all of this bubble up from in you, Summer?
I mean, Lord Debbie, how much time do we have? I mean, I think in reality what boils down to it, I love what you said about, like, this film couldn't be made 20 years ago, and while I much like sometimes reflect on my career and wonder, you know, I wonder the what ifs about so many things in my life these days, but I know for a fact I couldn't have told this story 20 years ago. I mean, I was 40 when I wrote the story and shot the film. I'm now 44, and so I don't think I could have approached it with the maturity that I did, and I really did want to make a concerted effort to tell a story about a relationship. Like, I didn't want to tell it like it's not her story technically or his, and there's no like big moment to where like you realize something, you know, grandiose because of some grand gesture or something. It's really just two people that really care about each other, loving each other, and the only villain I feel in the movie is time. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so unfortunate about the situation, is because that's the thing these people can't control. Because I'm glad that you felt that way when they're in the bathroom, and that was my hope, was that I would hope that on the screen that you know, Klain and I could capture that je ne sais quoi of like knowing each other almost like in a former life, like you really thought these people may be like soulmates in some way or connected or just have this natural peace around each other. I don't know if like soulmates and fate is something everyone buys into, but I do feel like some people can create a peaceness around you where you feel comfortable, and I think these two people were just lucky to find it. And for me, I think it was probably, you know, a lot of escapism, a lot of hopes, a lot of regrets, a lot of maybe trying to capture the moments a few times in my life that I have had with people, but then also wanting to create the moments that I didn't get to have with certain people that I thought maybe it would have been right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where it come from. Like, I honestly didn't think I would write a love story when I sat down or thought about making a film. Like, I knew I wanted to make a character-driven piece, but then once I started, I was like binge watching, you know, things like everyone else during the pandemic. And I'd watch a lot of David Lean movies. So I'd watch Brief Encounter and Passionate Friend and rewatch my favorite film, Splendor in the Grass. And that was really like the light bulb moment for me, was like, okay, what would happen if Bud and Deanie got to have a weekend with each other when they grew up, and they could like hash out what happened with a more mature lens about it, because they went through so much. And I thought that might be an interesting way to go about a romance story, is in the lens of people having that moment to reconcile all the things that they didn't have an opportunity to do.
Mm-hmm. No, and it works so well, and all of that comes across, Summer. And, you know, as you're talking, I keep thinking about the bathroom scene, and it's like, my God, if you had started the film with that scene, nothing leading into it, but starting the film with that scene, I would have thought immediately that they were a married couple, they're getting ready to go out somewhere, especially when they get down, they're in the car, they hold hands in the car, just a perfect appearing relationship. A comfort that is there. But structuring the film the way you did, and we get that later into the film, in the third act, and you consider the hesitancy, the uncomfortableness that we see between them earlier in the film. It's like you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. Who's going to open their mouth first? Or who's not going to open their mouth at all?
Right, yeah.
And I love how you achieve that in structure, in your pacing with the edit, and in your performance and Clayne's performance. Because if we don't get that within the body language, it's not going to work. But we get it with the body language. You carry that through with the pacing of the edit. And as the hesitancy, trying to look into his eyes, and then he's not looking at you, and you're sitting on the counter. I knew exactly where your mind was in that moment as Sarah. But you convey the emotion so perfectly, so strongly, using the tools in the toolbox and in the performance. It's just really beautifully crafted there that really sets us up.
Thank you. I appreciate you mentioning that about like feeling as if they're married people, because when I designed the end of the film, like, I knew going into the film that these people would it's not going to be like happily ever after, you know, even though I'm not going to lie, like, I did play around in the edit, and I did have some footage where I could cut him going back to the airport, and I did toy around with it and show Clayne, and we were kind of like, shit, that is good, but it's not us, and it's not what I wanted to do at all. I just, you know, playing around. Sometimes you see what you don't like to help you get where you do like. But I did, when I was writing the screenplay, I wanted those moments together that they got to do everything they didn't get to do, even though it's not cookie cutter. Like, the necklace is like a proposal. You know, it's not a ring, but it's a necklace. He sits almost, you know, not on a knee, but he's sitting, you know, at her, you know, professing, and he gives it to her. So it's like a proposal. And, you know, the night's kind of like a honeymoon, and the airport's like their vows, so to speak, and they're out there almost alone. You know, there's no minister or nothing, but it's like a sweet little exchange of small words that mean a lot, and, you know, they say almost the same thing. So I wanted them to, like, get to have some version of these moments that you probably thought they could have had. And, I mean, even the most painful thing for me to write was that scene where they're in the car and the car seat's in the back, and I, you know, the way I wrote it was like the family that never was. And I just, like, I still get chills like thinking about it, because, you know, when I wrote the screenplay, I would, you know, do like, oh, the proposal that never was, the marriage they never had, but that family that never was, that's the one that really kind of gets you, because that viewpoint that Bruce and I decided to do as they travel to the airport is the viewpoint of what the child would see. And you can imagine, like, how a child could look at those parents, how much in love they were with each other, and what that could mean. So that was kind of what guided me in thinking about what that POV would be during that driving shot to the airport, holding hands and all that fun stuff.
Talking about Bruce, your visual, the visual grammar the two of you have come up with for this film is absolutely wonderful. You're using a lot of handheld. I love the POVs that we get, making use of windows, doors, hallways. We've got a structured frame, but so much is always at a distance, almost voyeuristically. And then slowly, the camera will come in and Bruce will focus the lens on a body part, on hands, on the hands touching the waist, and then pull back, and then go up, and up to the face, up and in a profile. I just love the visual grammar the two of you designed. So I'm curious what your discussions were to come up with this, so you have the visual tonal bandwidth that fits the emotional bandwidth.
Yeah, we definitely, that was the one thing, like, Bruce and I, we prepped pretty much virtually. We had, you know, had our Zoom calls and stuff, and we kind of developed, like, what we would consider, like, ground rules that would always help us make decisions and decide what to do. And I always knew I wanted there's something to be between the camera and the people up until the ending sequence of the film, because that's when, like, there's nothing between them at all. It's, you know, they're just there with each other. And I felt like, to me, the only way one thing can be super impactful is if you don't use it at all. And that way, when you do, it's a really big deal. So it's almost like working backwards from the intimacy close-up. And I always wanted it to be voyeuristic, like, what little acting experience I do have. I was in theater, and so I do come from a theatrical world of understanding the fourth wall and what that is. And I thought, well, I want to create that in cinema, and I want it to feel as if you're watching a play, because I do feel like this could almost be a stage play. And
yeah,
that you could watch these people, and you're maybe not supposed to be there. But we would have the rule, like, you know, the camera is never close as to the people as they feel with each other. Mm-hmm. That was a big rule for us. And that way, in every moment, we could decide, like, oh, how close are we going to go in? And we would just think about, well, how close do they feel with each other in this moment? And I definitely wasn't afraid of the long take. I know sometimes, too, people encourage me to do more coverage, but I just didn't need it. I'd never edited film before, but I knew I wanted to. And I loved puzzles, and I thought, you know, I just don't feel that I'll cut in here, because it would just take out of the emotion. And so I wanted people to sit in these emotions with these people, because that's the way you create tension, is, like, yep. You can't be afraid to, like, jump out of it so quickly. It's like, you know, maybe it's just like sitting through, you know, growing up as a child Southern, you know, you're very used to sitting, like, in church for an hour on end before you get up and move. Or, you know, it's just this idea of being stillness and things. And so I liked that we could play with that. I definitely enjoyed the through doorways and through mirrors, having the people feel as if they were watching almost like a documentary feel in a way, but you knew that, you know, you were peering in on something that you didn't feel like you should be, even though you were, that by the time you're there at the intimacy, it feels earned. That way it doesn't feel, hopefully, exploitative anyway or too boundary pushing. It feels natural and real, and you're there in the moment with them, and you could feel as much as they feel because you've earned it, you know. You've been kept away from them for a little bit long, a while. So that was really kind of some of our governing rules, is always putting something between the camera and people, and then thinking about how close the characters are with each other.
Well, I love the fact that you shied away from coverage, going back and mm-hmm. forth, back and forth. Seeing the profile, having the two of them standing face to face, like all the Hallmark movie endings, all the Christmas movies, that's how they end. They're in front of the Christmas tree and they're looking at each other. So we're mm-hmm. getting both people, both sides of love. And that's what we get here. And you're absolutely right. If you were doing coverage and you're going back and forth, it would have just taken us out of the moment. The tension would not have been there. And it's the will they, won't they?
Yeah.
That whole thing you built up really well. And I'm so glad you shied away from the cut, back and forth coverage.
Yeah. It's so interesting you say the will they, won't they, because sometimes I think about it that way. And then I also think, like, as I was making it, you know, I hope that the audience people would, like, will they be able to, like, could they or won't they be able to? Like, you know, that there's something that is beyond their control, that they're not going to be able to, like, have this moment. And, you know, that was, you know, something, you know, even when Clayne and I would talk even about, you know, the film and stuff, it was very important that we really think thoughtfully about the space between them throughout the film and how it slowly closes, and when is the first time that you see them touch each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the kitchen scene's one of my favorites, and, you know, that was definitely one where I felt like we could really start creating that palette for the audience to really see what these two people could have been, but also start laying the foundation of seeing, like, oh, well, now you're starting to see, like, imagine what it was 20 years ago. If this is the way it was now, imagine what they were doing like then, you know?
And then the whole time I'm waiting, what is he going to say to put his foot in his mouth and screw things up?
Yep. It's going to be something so small, you know, something triggering.
That's all it takes, because at that point, we don't really know what happened years ago. And it's only, it's like the pushing before we find out what happened. So I love that. Now, the mirror thing, I have to say, the bathroom mirror sequence, I love that you guys shot it from behind Sarah and Joseph shooting at the mirror. So we get that whole sense of the two of them are looking at the reflection of themselves had they been together.
Yeah, that's definitely, some of those things are happy accidents because, you know, bathrooms aren't too big, and we had already shot the shower scene with the camera in the other way, but I definitely wanted to have that bathroom where you do get to see how Sarah kind of looks at herself and how Joseph and her are kind of looking at themselves after these moments, and we haven't really seen that before, aside from, like, you know, Joseph checking his hair a little bit before Sarah enters the treehouse, which, you know, we hardly see men primping a little bit, so I wanted to break a few stereotypes and, like, men care how they look.
You know, especially when they got a good head of hair like that.
Yeah, and, you know, in the bathroom, I love that because I also wanted the mirror to also be able to capture anything that, for whatever reason, our framing couldn't, whatever limitation, that the mirror would be almost like another camera.
Yeah.
And that's how I thought about using the mirror sometime, is like being able to give the audience like a different camera to look at and see, and to see the different versions of Sarah and Joseph, because it is very different when you're looking at yourself and when someone else is looking at you, and in these moments that it is kind of nice to see that.
Because when we have all the profiles of the two of them as they're looking at each other, it's like we're seeing half of the picture, and they're just seeing the other person. But that mirror shot, they're seeing themselves together, full face frontal.
That's right. And they don't get to see themselves together a lot, like as a couple, like looking at, like, here we are together. It's us. Like, here we are. This is what we look like. This is what it would be like. And that's where, like, you know, a little smile, and like you bring her the coffee that he knows exactly the way she likes it. And, you know, it's just very, like, you know, oh, wow, for like the brief moments that they get to enjoy it is really when they just get to look at themselves in the mirror for a few minutes, and that's where they get to see, like, oh, this is what could have been. And but then you have to step out of the doorway and put your clothes on and get ready to go face the world.
But no, that bathroom scene is so pivotal. Your kitchen scene is very key. Your bathroom scene is key. Now, your color palette for this film, I love your color palette. Number one, we're in the fall. It's toasty. It's chilly. The leaves are crunchy. Things are turning. You're really falling into golds, the burnished reds, the green of Sarah's coat, life renewing itself almost as a counter to the crunchy leaves. Then Joseph, he's more in the blues and the grays. So you've got this palette that differentiates the two of them. Within this beautiful setting, you've got the woods, you've got the house, you've got, you know, the warmth within the house. And then, of course, the blue notes with the hotel room. I'm curious about your choices for the color palette, because you've got contrast there and it works so well for really helping define these two individuals.
Yeah, thank you. When I wrote the script, I actually wrote it in, like, three sections. Our past, our present, our future. Like, I literally, like, would section off the sections of the film. And I did think about the color palette in a sense that I wanted it to go from warm to cool, and I wanted the ending act to be definitely differentiated from the first two, because here they are in this cool, like almost, you know, the bedroom with all the blues and the blue sheets and things. It's almost like their sea of love, so mm-hmm. to speak. And, you know, very like almost cleansing and renewal, even and after seeing all this, like you say, changing of seasons, the leaves dying off, you know, life, the remnants of life that was, which is what all the fall is and mm-hmm. all the, you know, the beauty in it. And there is beauty in all that, and it is beautiful. But then when they go away to, you know, he goes to visit her in Nashville, like I wanted the Nashville portion to definitely be, they're in this almost, you know, magical place away. Like, this is their sea of love. Everything's cool and refreshing because they've almost, like, cleansed themselves of all these things that they were holding back between them. And that's why, like, you know, Sarah's clothes color palette drastically changes the morning after versus what she's been wearing the rest of the film, like her airport outfit or what I call, like, her wedding dress would go. And then even with Joseph, you know, I really wanted him to definitely, like, be in, like, just plain black and white when he come to Nashville, so that there was, that's the idea, is that he's coming there just very, you know, almost, like, here it is, you know, almost newspaper-like, like, here I am, I'm just putting it out there in black and white type yep. situation. And I just got very blessed that it was rainy days, the days we shot those exteriors of that hotel and on the way to the airport. It was like everything about this film's been kismet, and that was like the cinema gods looking after me, that it was raining and it was misty and it was foggy, and at the airport it created this, you know, overcast in it, and Bruce and I was just like praise. So that was like the happy accident that, you know, helped us. But we definitely did intentionally wanted to take the temperature from warm to cool, mm-hmm. Very specifically in the journey of their, like, love, so mm-hmm. to speak.
Trust me, I saw the whole weather change, and boy, it just fit so perfectly, Summer.
So blessed.
So.
I mean, we went through a lot of stuff, and, you know, we shot our storyline in order, Clayne and I, and ooh. I got blessed, like, I structured the film very specifically, but I also wanted to shoot her in order. But I knew when we would go to Nashville that would be the location where we would be exposed to potentially the public in some small way, whereas the rest of the film has been so insular.
Right.
So, and that's really the only, you know, there's not a lot of exterior dialogue scenes, so I wanted it to be able to be exterior when they're both together, outside, fresh air and everything around, but also, like, I wanted to shoot that last so that we could avoid any, like, exposure to COVID, because we shot this, like, pre-vaccine, so we were really, like, in the thick of, like, walking on eggshells every day.
Well, you made it through.
Yeah, we did. I mean, I was so worried, like, you know, imagine, you know, with the intimacy and the different things, like, you just wake up every day and about having an anxiety attack of, like, who's going to test next, you know, who's going to have, you know, positive or something, and we got blessed that we did not.
Well, so. I'm glad that you did not. Now, I know, you know,
I couldn't afford it. I don't know that I would have been able to finish the film had we done it.
Yeah, that's just it. When you're on a tight schedule, especially with low budget, no budget, micro budget films, every day counts. And to be felled by COVID, that would just destroy. There goes your budget.
Oh, yeah.
There goes, it's like, okay, we don't have money to pay anybody for the rest of the film. We don't have this. So, yeah.
I mean, the COVID budget alone for me was probably like 25 to 30% of my shooting budget.
I'm sure.
Was literally just COVID testing and COVID stuff. But
I've heard that from so many filmmakers, Summer.
And, you know. I probably could have shot another week, but I didn't need to.
Yeah.
I think we did what we needed to do in the time we had, and I made a film about memories, and making it will always be a wonderful memory to me. Having the opportunity to do it. I mean, I hope I get to do it again.
Oh, I think you will. I hope you will. Now, I have to say, I'm sure the jury's going to be divided on the ending of the film, and we're not going to give away spoilers here.
Sure. Yeah, but, no spoilers. Yeah.
But let me say, I love this ending.
Thank you.
Maybe it's because I'm looking at it as a woman.
Yeah.
But it's uncompromising. You know, you have to make choices in life. Do you get it all? Do you not get it all?
Yeah.
And what is all to you?
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah makes her choice.
Yep, they both do. They both do, but she especially. I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, this is not a true story, but I'm not going to, like, blow smoke and say there's not, it's not a true story, but there is very real emotions from my life in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the plot is not true, but the emotions that this woman goes through and the choices and things that she makes and experiences are something very real to my life. And I definitely, like, I'm a person that I've not had it all. I never have. It's not the life that I've been fortunate to have yet, maybe one day. But that's not the life that I live, and I always wanted to make a truthful film. And this is the only ending that I know to be true, because these are the only kinds of things that I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, having to think about being able to have it all, and then maybe not being able to have it all, and deciding what it is you're willing to, you know, let be a memory.
Yeah.
And that's difficult, you know.
Yeah, I love the ending. I love
it. Thank you. It was a while to figure out. Like, I always knew that it would be what it is without giving it away. Like, I knew what I wanted to happen. Like, I knew what I wanted each character to do. But, like, there were so many little nuances of things. Like, if there was anywhere where I did shoot a lot of coverage, I did shoot alternative versions of the ending. And by that, I mean the characters doing alternative things.
Mm-hmm.
So that I would have that to play with. Like, you know, especially, too, even when she's alone in the bathroom in the airport.
Ugh.
Like, there's a lot of different things there. And, you know, and her in the terminal, you know, there's a few different things there that just so I could have it to play with, because I wasn't so arrogant to think that I actually knew how to edit a movie and figure it all out. So that was one place where I was probably most insecure. Is I was probably most secure with the beginning of the film and the end of the film in making the movie. That's where I was most insecure, because I know how important both of them are, and I was always very nervous in those two parts of the filmmaking process.
Well, sure, because your opening is going to
surprisingly everything else I wasn't.
You know, the opening
probably should have been.
The opening is going to set the tone. And the ending is going to close it out. So, yeah, those are both really important. That's the cookie in the Oreo cookie. The rest is just the filling.
Exactly. That's so true. And I'm one that tears them apart first.
But the cookies, you need the cookies to hold it together.
You got to be held together. You got to have your bookends.
The editing had to be challenging for you with this one. What was that editing learning curve like for you?
Well, the biggest thing, to be quite honest, to start with was just, like, the technical side of it, because I didn't know how to do it. So I watched a lot of YouTube figuring out, like, literally how to edit, like, how to use the technology. Like, I had took, like, maybe 10 years ago, a couple of classes in Final Cut, I don't know, 7 or whatever. But I'd sat in a lot of edit rooms over the life of my producing career. So
mm-hmm.
I've been in a lot of editing rooms with directors and giving notes, and I've been through that process a lot. But I've never had, like, my hands on the board, so to speak. But I'd always grew up making puzzles, so I tried to just think of it that way. And, you know, I did about a week of editing. You know, I was by myself, very insular. And luckily, Clayton was kind enough to call, and, you know, we kind of had a conversation, and it was like, you know, how you doing? How's it going? You know, those kind of things. And luckily, we just kind of picked up where we left off and started and kept our conversation and collaborating going. So we somewhat edited the film together, and by that I mean like I edited the film, but he watched every cut with me, and we live edited a few scenes together, ones that I felt really self-conscious about or didn't really feel good about what I was doing. And so he was really like my sounding board there. And while I probably learned more about, I feel like just the exciting things I learned while editing and being able to have the luxury of having a fellow actor that'd be willing to go through that process with you is that you really never know how someone else sees you. And then in moments where I was in editing, I'd be like, you know what, I'm really kind of looking for this. I'd like to cut off Joe's the feeling this way, or I'm really looking for this moment of him or that. And he's like, well, I remember. Well, I remember when you were doing this, or I remember feeling this way, or I remember that. And I was like, oh, my God. And then I could go back and look at the footage through, like, his eyes for a moment. Mm-hmm. And that was really, like, amazing to me to, like, be like, whoa, I would never think that this is the type of moment that would give me that reaction out of Joseph. And that, these were things, like, really were pivotal, like, moments in the edit that was hard for me to figure out, specifically, like, you know, and when they're together, like, right, you know, what I call the pillow talk moments, and mm-hmm. figuring out the exact way to get that to move into something else, and looking for that moment, and there's just this moment where Joseph just kind of takes a deep exhale, as if, like, just relaxed and at peace and everything, and, like, that took a little combing to find, like, so it's little nuggets like that that I was like, oh, God, I didn't look at this. And so those were probably the things that I don't know how I would have navigated those problems on my own. So I'm really fortunate that, you know, he was willing to put in the work after the camera wrap to, you know, help me on that process. So those were probably the things that, and then of course making the big decision to like kill Darlings. There's, the script was over-scripted in certain places. I learned that now. I wrote the script, like I said, to be in three sections. I even had title cards in the movie, and the script was written to be in narrative order. So the whole ending, the whole time jump thing was found in the edit. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I just kind of made the decision that, like, oh, just like Bruce and I had talked about, you know, the camera should never be as close to the people. I made a decision. I was like, oh, well, I want the audience to experience this the way that the characters will remember it. So that's why I decided a very specific point where from now moving forward, the audience will only see things as a memory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I brought in like the idea of the flashbacks, slowly unveiling like what all had happened between like, you know, the night before, so to speak. So that whole motivation of using a time jump and flashbacks to show certain things, because when those two people are going to think about that night they had together, I think those are the moments that might stand out.
I think they might.
But, you know, some things like, you know, I remember how people make me feel. And these are moments where these people hopefully made each other feel very loved and cared for.
One other element of the film here that's so important, Summer, is the music. You do not go into overkill with the music.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God, because you could have trampled if the score had gone too heavy, or if the individual mm-hmm. needle drops were too heavy, it would have trampled over the emotion
mm-hmm.
that we're watching unfold. So I'm curious, what were your thoughts? What were your considerations when it came to the music for the film? Both Carly Johnson's song, Needle Drops, and the composition itself.
Well, I knew, number one, that I wouldn't be able to afford a lot of music in terms of Needle Drops. So I specifically avoided, you know, some tropes of early emerging artist films of like, you know, there's no radio playing in the car. You know, like certain things like that I knew just to try to avoid just from a, like, producerial point of view. So, but artistically, I wanted the music to just be more of, like, an enhancer, not a narrator.
Mm-hmm.
And I always... always wanted the music to come in with the story, not before the story. Clain introduced me to William Ryan Fritsch, the composer, and it was very kismet that I can't even remember if I really even listened to many other people's scores and things because he was just so perfect. We talked about like wanting the instrumentation to feel like breathing and these deep breaths, or like what is it that can like feel like this pressure or things between these two people. So I kind of thought about like, you know, I grew up going to churches where sometimes the people played like the pedal organs, mm-hmm. And you could always feel them, and to me they always sounded kind of like a heartbeat. And so I wanted him to go through the route of using instrumentation that would mimic these kind of internal feelings of these people. So that's why some of it feels a bit somewhat breathy at points, but also tension and air moving through the space between them. And that was really something we talked about a lot. And in terms of finding where to actually put the music, I usually kind of govern through life just in general. I find less is more. That's, you know, I know that's not everyone's taste. I know that, you know, some people, whatever, you know, taste people have, sometimes this gets a little frustrating, the sparsity of certain things. But to me, I like them because I don't feel like I'm being forced to feel a certain way.
Right.
So that's why I like to take very, very meticulously choiced placement of things. And I really was excited that Will also was willing to have that big ending coda, like 6-minute piece through the whole ending of the film, like that kind of thing. I was just like, that was just so beautiful. And when I talked to him about it, I was like, is it weird that like I feel like this is just going to start here and go the whole way? Like, is this strange? He's like, no, let's go for it, you know? So that was kind of interesting. And then Carly, I mean, what an amazing artist, first off. Like, if anyone does not know Carly Johnson, I'm going to, you know, I don't do shameless plugs a lot, and I'm not shameless about it at all. Like, go listen to her music. She's amazing. And all the cues in the film are hers, and there's only two in the film, and then there's the end title song. And I listened to that song, Burn Your Fears, and that was just so beautiful to me and just so perfect about, you know, the lyrics of what she actually says, like, 'cause I will love you harder than anyone else will. And it's just like almost like the lyrics are the things that these people, it's like the what-if feelings. It's like,
yeah,
why aren't we together? Because I would feel that was the way. I would do this for you. I would be this way. And, like, this is the way it would be. It's a very much like that kind of if kind of lyric. And I really went out on a limb and asked her if she would be willing to, like, work with me on an end credit song. Because during the edit, one thing that I, for whatever reason, was drawn to do is I, like, started writing like some poems and things, and it kind of helped me in certain ways. And it was all like poems of like Sarah's love letter to Joseph, in other words. It's like, hey, like it's almost like a final, like a letter that, you know, her feelings to him after the fact, so to speak. And so that's where the lyrics to the end title song, My Moon, comes from. Is that was a poem of mine, and I was like, Carly, I don't know how this works. I've never written a song. I just have these poems, and if you'd like to do something together, I'll send them to you. My feelings aren't going to be hurt. I'm sure that, you know, I still will dig through your catalog, and I'm sure I can find another song for the end. And she was like, no, she was really game for it. So she and I looked at My Moon specifically, and I just gave her the lyrics and said, do what you want to with it. And she sent me back a track, and I was like, this is perfect. And that was it. I think it's about really trusting your gut when you try to find your collaborators, and really feeling like if whatever they create makes you feel the way you want to feel, then they're probably a good fit for you. And I feel like I follow my instincts pretty good when it comes to the artistic styles of people and knowing how to match them with other people. Like, that's one thing I love about producing is – being able to almost like artistically matchmake people. So I felt really excited that I'd never done it for myself before. So this was a very new thing. So I was like, wow, this is interesting. So I got really fortunate that these people had such soul in their music and in their hearts, and they really just loved the story, which meant a lot to me. And Will, the composer, he knew every scene that I wanted to feel. Like, we were always, you know, in lockstep with each other the whole way. And some things that, once he created things, he'd always give me alts, and I would like, gosh, Will, I love all these. I'm going to put this one here and this one here. He's like, well, you want me to make some more stuff? And I'm like, you know, I... yes, we need some more, but like, I'm finding places to put these things that work perfectly. So that was some good luck too along the way, was being able to, like, you know, figure out where to place things. But I always knew that montage would need a song.
Yeah.
So I did, and I actually wrote it thinking, this is, I guess, like one of those inside scoops of something that had to go to the editing floor, is that I actually did film... I did something I tell people never to do, which is I filmed Sarah singing a song, and I didn't have the rights to it. And I knew that going in. I was willing to take that risk. But she was in the recording studio after she'd finished her session, and she gets a guitar and sings a song. And she's singing the song while the montage would happen. And so I had that footage and everything, and initially I thought her voice would move the montage through, but I soon found in the edit that I felt that was taking it a little too much in, like, Sarah's world of emotion and, you know, her being the one, and because I didn't really script anything to have, like, Joseph's version of that moment, so mm-hmm. It really was kind of, like, taking it away from the relationship aspect. So while it was a beautiful thing to film, and I'm proud of myself for doing it, and the crew was supportive, sometimes you just have to realize that when you write things on a page, once you put them on a screen and start putting the pieces together, some things just aren't going to work the way you thought. It's different when you have people moving and breathing.
Absolutely. Now, I have one last, the most important question of all for you, Summer.
Okay.
Would director Summer ever hire actor Summer again and work with her? And on the flip side, would actor Summer ever want to work for director Summer again?
Oh, I never really thought about that way. First off, actor Summer would love to act any day for any director. Well, not any director, but I mean, I would definitely love to be considered to act again for sure. And director Summer definitely has, as I think about what I'm doing next, I'm not going to lie, I am thinking about what I'm going to do next and the parts that I would probably do in those pieces. I don't know that it's always like, I'm not committed that I have to lead every piece that I want to direct, but I am finding material where there's, you know, roles where I would want to be in it as actor Summer for sure and be director Summer. So absolutely yes, director Summer would work with actor Summer. Would actor Summer work with director Summer? I would say yes, because I think as an actor, I think even more so, actor Summer would be honored to be on a set with every human that was on the set during the making of this film, because I don't think that I could have been, I felt so safe and vulnerable in that space that's what made actor Summer thrive. And while as a director, I'd love to take complete, you know, like, look at what I did as a director. Like, I can't do that because this is not the type of role that I feel like I could have done just because I'm like the bee's knees as a directing myself. I feel like the people around me were the bee's knees of like making that space for me to do what I wanted to do and to believe in me. And that's what made actor Summer be actor Summer. And I get the impression actor Summer did okay. I'm proud of it. So I think that's the best way. I'm hoping that, more importantly, I'm hoping the other actors might would want to work with me again as a director Summer. Like, I would be honored, you know. That would be lovely, but I definitely am thinking about ways to hopefully do that in the future.
Well, I think when you with your future projects, you definitely have to have Clayne there with you in some fashion.
I mean, wouldn't that be a blessing? Artistically, I feel very safe knowing he exists, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's very, I'm very thankful for is, you know, as corny as it sounds, you know, being able to exist and have this experience, like, I do feel like it's kismet, and I feel very lucky that he agreed to do it, because he'd never really done this type of film before, and, you know, I still check myself to wonder, like, why in the hell would he do this? But, you know, like, I'm thankful, and I'm grateful, and I would be very honored if he would, you know, oblige creating something with me again, no matter what it was. And I would be most excited to help him create whatever he wanted to create as well. So I'm hoping that it's a two-way street.
Well, Summer, all I can say is you have done a beautiful job. You and I belies this being your first narrative feature directorial on every level. And as I said at the top, it's emotional, poignant beauty every step of the way. And I can't wait to see what you direct next.
Me too. From your lips to God's ears, like, let's manifest it. I feel, you know, you gotta start believing it. And I definitely have almost finished writing what I would like to do next. Whether it'll be what I do next, I don't know. But I always advise filmmakers to, like, start thinking about what you want to do next during the edit. I think it's a good way to, like, keep your mind active and not, like, go into, like, a vast depression. But I also think it keeps your spirits moving. But also it gives you something to talk about, like, when you're out in the world and people, like, say, well, what are you going to do next? You don't have to be like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I definitely am going to challenge myself maybe to open up and see what an ensemble piece would be like. But that is very... I'm a little nervous about that, but that would be a big stretch. So I'm doing a big, huge time, like multiple time period ensemble cast writing thing. But I also have in my back pocket, like, another perhaps two or three hander that might be maybe the next little, you know, water to dip my toe in, so to speak.
Well, whenever you make it, I will be there to see it, Summer.
Oh my gosh, that is so lovely. It means so much. It really does. Like, I know there's so many things to watch out now that's so wonderful, and especially this time of year. So I don't know if I can express how grateful I am that you would take the time to watch it and have such thoughtful conversation with me about it. I mean, that's, you know, one thing I just really am very grateful that you do and that it connected with you. So my hope is that people watch it and can remember how someone made them feel. I got to this place through journaling and each chapter being about someone that intersected my life, whether ever so brief or for longer mm-hmm. periods of time. And I'm not going to say all of those were happy pieces of pages on a thing, but they've made me who I am, and so for that I'm grateful. And I still believe that, you know, sometimes good people aren't good for each other. Sometimes good people do bad things. Sometimes bad people do good things. And I just want to make films that can show those with authenticity and honesty and just rawness, I hope, that people can connect to.
You've definitely done that here. So you now go have a wonderful rest of your day. And I hope we chat sooner rather than later in the future.
I do too. Anytime. I'd love to. I love hearing, you know, your reflections, and I would be very honored if, you know, we'll be having this conversation sooner than later.
Oh, Summer, thank you so, so much.